This is a Dragon Blazer production.
This is Unsolved Comedy.
Hello, and welcome back to Unsolved Comedy. I am your host, Kizea, and we've got my co-host,
Steven.
And we've got somebody extra special.
Hi, my name's Dara.
And she is going to help us with this case today. She's really big into true crime. She's my sister-in-law. Be prepared to hear me ripped a new ass. It's going to be great.
Picking on Kazea is one of my favorite pastimes.
It's all of our favorite pastimes.
Of course. Even though most of the jokes that you've heard on this podcast, picking on anybody, are all picking on Steven. It's going to change today.
I pick on him, too.
Alrighty. So, the case that we're covering today is the third episode of the Unsolved Mysteries reboot called House of Terror, which, first of all, we're going to do our normal.
I don't feel like you gave the best inflection on that. It is House of Terror.
That's so much better.
Actually, it's La Maison de Terror.
I'm not French. I'm America!
So let's start out. We'll ask Dara first, since she's our special guest. What did you think of the coverage of the case on the actual episode itself?
I mean, it was pretty decent. There was a lot of details that I feel like they could have delved into a lot more. And one of the things that kind of caught me off guard is the lack of suspects.
Yeah, they literally only suggested that Xavier was the suspect. That's it.
Yeah, like, they gave no other options. And as we delve a little more into it and get to kind of some of our own theories on it, I think that's going to become an important thing for me, is that they only give one option.
Yeah, there's no, like, additional, hey, this is a little bit weird. You know, yeah, this guy might have done something, which is something they gave us, people that didn't even know the victims in the last case that we covered. So this is extremely different.
Yeah.
What did you think of the coverage of the case, Steven?
I couldn't understand a word they said.
And I understood it all without subtitles.
I will say, I got all of my notes for this case from the actual episode, and I would not have gotten them if it wasn't for Dara, because she understands French completely, which was very good.
It was like reading a book.
Yes.
Or listening to your annoying friend/cousin/sister-in-law translate a bunch of random French people.
Yes.
Correct.
All right. So, let's delve into the case a little bit. This case has five victims. Plus two animal victims as well.
Yeah. Like, what the hell is up with that? Like, seriously.
Like, the dogs are important too, man.
Dogs' lives matter. Bark, bark, bitches.
I almost get more annoyed that they don't talk about the fact that the dogs died. Like,
literally.
You had no information, nothing in the timeline about when the animals were killed.
The really weird thing about that, and it's not so much that, you know, dogs' lives matter and all, but they had no blood on the scene, and killing two dogs without a struggle is really odd.
Well, I assume that the dogs were killed outside.
Did they mention if the dogs also had those sleeping pills?
They never said whether
or did they not do an autopsy?
They probably didn't do a tox report on the dogs, you know.
So I find that odd.
I don't know. I find it strange that you can kill the number of people that were killed while the animals are still alive, especially when you're talking about, so they don't specifically say in the episode, but from what I was looking up, and what they show in the episode, the dogs are Rottweilers. Like, we're not talking about
little Boston Terriers,
you know, yappy dogs. We're talking about big, muscular animals that are well known to be incredibly loyal
and protective.
And protective of the people that they belong to.
And they were shot.
Yeah, and the dogs were shot.
What I assume probably happened to the dogs. But
I suppose we should probably wait till we get to there in the story, but
yeah, we're jumping ahead a little bit. There were some really strange circumstances.
Like, I feel like we're dealing with a Dexter type killer because, like, there's no blood. Like, I feel like the whole room had to be wrapped in, like, a tarp or a saran wrap.
That's we're talking about literally the entire house, not just one room. There's no DNA evidence at all. Not fingerprints, not a single drop of blood, not a single hair or fiber. I mean, we're talking about literally the most sterile crime scene I have ever heard of. For them to not even to be able to detect the most minute with luminol and the different testing options that they have available, to not be able to get any type of fluorescence of blood when there's five people and two animals killed in a home. Yeah, Dexter's
it.
I mean, how much plastic wrap is there available in France? Because I feel like it was all in this one house.
Literally.
Well, I have some thoughts on that, which I will get into when we get to that part of the case.
So let's talk about the people in this case. We have two counts. One is the father of the suspect. His name is Newbert. And
Hubert.
Then we have, or Hubert, sorry. And then we have Count Xavier, who is this primary suspect. And
which I think is a great name. I just want to say that.
That's just because it's your son's name. Do you want to pronounce that last name for me?
DuPont de Ligonnès.
So that is Xavier and Hubert's last name. And then we have the four children, Arthur, Thomas, Anne, and Benoit.
And the wife.
And the wife, her name is Agnes. Those are the main people in this case.
Yeah.
Let's start out with Count Xavier. He is French nobility. And when all of this takes place, he's 50 years old. And we know that he's at least 4 years older than his wife, Agnes. Because when they meet, she is 16/17 and he's 20/21. We also know that Arthur is not his. Xavier breaks up with Agnes after they meet for about a year's length of time and comes back and she's pregnant with somebody else.
She did
son.
Some bounce.
Yeah, and it was considered incredibly taboo amongst the French nobility even today for there to be an unwed mother and even more unheard of for another member of French nobility to marry that woman and adopt their illegitimate child and give them a legitimate name.
He's a very courageous douchebag.
I don't like this guy.
He's awful. So we've got Arthur, who's 20, who is the adopted stepson of Xavier. We've got Thomas, 18, who is his first biological son. And 16, which we hear that she's the best student of all the children. That's
she's also a model, so she's very pretty, but incredibly intelligent.
And then Benoit is 13. Let's see. So on the 11th, we notice that...
11th of April.
The 11th of April in 2011. We notice that the note on the mailbox says stop sending mail here, and then we notice that the shutters are closed where they are almost always otherwise open.
It says, return to sender.
Yeah.
It does say return to sender.
Yeah, they interview a neighbor who is actually not just a neighbor, but was kind of considered a family friend. She did a lot of tailoring work for the family and lived in the same building. And right away on April 11th, she notices something incredibly strange, which is that all of the shutters to the house are closed. And she said that, in the entire time that the family has lived there, they've never been closed. When the family travels, when everybody's home, you know, and this is an incredibly loud and rambunctious house of a very loving family. Those shutters are always open. And she notices for 3 days straight that in addition to this weird note on their mailbox,
which was not left by actual post office men, this was left, we'll find out later,
by the family, father. Yeah. Saying, you know, to stop leaving mail there, and she immediately knows that something is wrong, and within just a couple of days of noticing it, reports it to the authorities.
Yeah. She reports it to the authorities on the 13th, and the note is discovered on the 11th. So she reports it to the authorities on the 13th, and that's when we see Jean-Marc Bloch, and he is the chief of staff at Paris Police, and he says that that's when the first search of the house is done. From what I remember, there's nothing really weird. Like, no, he assumes just, that people left willingly.
Just blankets are missing, some clothes were missing. So the pictures.
The pictures don't go missing.
Well, they don't notice that the pictures are missing until they come back later. But on that first search of the house, they don't notice anything really out of place other than, you know, some clothes missing from the closet and some duvet covers missing off the beds.
Which was weird because he said that they had to call the locksmith to open the door, but at the same time they feel there was no reason for a formal investigation at that time.
Yeah, they essentially said that they feel like the family just kind of packed up and left voluntarily, you know, kind of a little bit of in a hurry, which was a little odd, but nothing suspicious in the home.
Right. All of the cars are still there except for the C5, which we find out where that has gone later. I'll leave that for a little bit. But then we have a couple of letters that arrive on April 9th through the 14th. They arrive to different people in that timeline. So on the 9th, a certain person gets a letter, and throughout those days, each person gets a letter.
Yeah, and some of those people included friends and family. Particularly, Agnes's family was really concerned when they received this letter. And this letter is—it's
very weird. I have some pieces written down. The first line of the letter is, "We are being looked after by the American government."
Yeah, that essentially goes on to say that Xavier is actually an undercover agent for the DEA.
Yeah, so he's actually been brought in by the American government to infiltrate a drug ring. And this included changed identities for the family. And in the letters, it also says, "We will be completely uncontactable. You won't be able to reach us in any way."
Okay, so this is weird.
Yeah, this is bizarre as all get out.
And I remember you saying that it was, did you say it was Agnes's family that sent the letters?
No, it was Agnes's family who received the letter, okay, and was incredibly concerned about it because it didn't line up with anything that they knew to be true of Xavier or Agnes or any member of the family. But then there was, you know, Bruno, right, Xavier's best friend, who's like, oh, yeah, I can totally hear Xavier saying this. He's this incredible man who's lived this huge life, right, and I could totally see him being an undercover agent for the DEA, because that's what we all think of our best friends, right? No.
Well, and the weird thing is that this, it's, like, it's odd. It's, this letter is addressed to these people and signed by Agnes and Xavier, apparently. But it makes no mention of the children except that they're being looked after by the American government.
Now, how possible? Because, okay, so Xavier, based on what we know after watching the episode, essentially disappears. And, okay, so if I did this and I sent a letter, this is really elaborate, yeah, to send. So,
especially when we find out
any kind of basis of truth, do you think, on this letter?
Well, so we find out in the episode, too, that from 2001 until very early into 2011, the family actually lived in Florida, U.S.
Yeah, they fucked it all up and they lost all of their money, but they
tried to move to Florida, but they failed for 10 years before they
had connections to the U.S. Now, how likely is it that this random French nobleman is an undercover agent for U.S. authorities?
Very unlikely.
I mean, there would have to be some other agencies involved, forces. The U.S. doesn't just assume authority over...
I get all that. Not to mention
that these people were staunch Catholics. So imagine the things that you have to do as somebody undercover infiltrating a drug ring. You have to potentially kill people. You have to potentially have sex with people that
somebody doesn't have a problem killing people.
Well, yeah, somebody.
Or children.
It's a lot easier to believe when we find out what his motives would be that he did this for those motives as opposed to he was actually a spy for the DEA because that entails so many things that would go against his religion.
I just feel like it's super elaborate if it was completely fake and like wouldn't it have been easier to be like, we went on vacation.
I mean, yeah, but being on vacation isn't a long-term answer. He didn't want them to ever look for the bodies.
I mean, it's... Okay, but you don't show up and people are going to look for the bodies. They got that letter and people still looked for the bodies.
Yeah, so they got these letters and essentially Agnes's family read the letter and immediately went to the district attorney and was like, yo, dude, this doesn't make sense. My daughter and my grandchildren just up and disappeared and so did my son-in-law, but I get this letter saying that my son-in-law is an undercover agent for the U.S. authorities, and we know that they've, you know, made all of these attempts to move to the U.S., and it essentially, you know, screwed their financial situation beyond repair, which nobody knew about. His children all attended private schools and universities. And he's French nobility, which they expect to have money. And nobody knew that old man had just straight up spent all of their money.
Now, and let's talk for a minute about how many times the cops went to this house. Because it's an excessive amount.
They didn't find anything.
The cops searched the house 5 times in total before they searched the final time and found bodies.
But they searched the house 5 times in a week.
Exactly. They searched the 13th was the first search, the 15th was the second, the 18th was the third, and then the 19th and 20th both had searches as well. So 5 times
six times, because they also searched it the very next day, and that's when they discovered the bodies.
Yes.
Yeah, it seems like they focused mostly on the inside of the house and then didn't find it until they actually searched the outside. Yeah.
And you brought up pictures missing. They noticed that the pictures are missing on the 15th. And they said that that's not suspect because when people leave a home, they take things that are dear to them.
Yeah, that mean something to them.
Yeah.
But then we find out on the 6th search. So during the 6th search, there's 2 things happening simultaneously. So there are police officers searching the home and surrounding area, and at the same time, the district attorney is giving a press conference basically saying that they're going to launch a formal investigation into this disappearance, that it's very worrying that this whole family is missing. And in the middle of the press conference... So we're talking, he's literally speaking to the media.
Yeah, and he stops the press conference dead in its tracks to take a phone call. And what we assume that phone call said is, hey, you need to stop this. We just found bodies. Because he says that they're going to delay the press conference after he gets off the phone.
And they don't really come back to that either.
No. Well, they kind of do. Bruno, Xavier's best friend, then talks about how, as the press conference is continuing, it actually goes to live coverage where they discover these graves buried under, or dug underneath the terrace in the garden. But it was weird because when they found the graves, they found one large grave that had Agnes, Arthur, Anne, Benoit, and both dogs. And then in a separate grave, they found Thomas's body all by itself.
Now, I think
thoroughly proving that Xavier had a favorite.
Xavier had a continuing bloodline.
Yes. The one thing that I do want to address is how these bodies were found, because it was fucked up. It was weird. These bodies were found in large trash bags, and they were bound inside the trash bags. And then the trash bags themselves were bound with duct tape.
Well, they also, so the bodies themselves were actually wrapped in the blankets and sheets that were missing from inside the house. And then the blankets were bound, and then they were placed in large trash bags, and the trash bags were bound. But there's interesting little items found with each body.
Each body has a religious icon, and from what I think you mentioned, this is supposed to imitate a religious burial.
Right, so they're found with rosaries and religious candles and, you know, things that are part of a Catholic burial ceremony that takes place at the cemetery when someone of the Catholic faith is buried. So the significance of these items is that the person who buried the bodies has this emotional bond where they want the bodies to be treated with reverence and essentially was trying to make the ground they were buried in consecrated, essentially giving them a truly religious burial in coincidence with their faith.
The other thing that the police notice, very obvious, sorry, I have to state the obvious, Xavier's not there.
Yeah.
He's not anywhere.
Whoops.
Yeah, you know,
and he is immediately presumed the prime suspect, and according to them, they mention this later on in the episode, he is the only suspect that they've ever looked at on this case, ever.
And now we're doing a French Where's Waldo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Literally a French Where's Waldo, because this guy just disappeared. We'll find out later that he didn't actually just disappear, but it appeared at the beginning as though he had just
poof, vanished. But yeah, I mean, bizarrely enough, we figure out that he actually spent the next week. So we have to backtrack just a little bit.
We have to backtrack to the
third and fourth, which is of April. Well, we actually have to backtrack a little bit before that, because there's something that we've left out that is pretty crucial. So we've talked about how Xavier was incredibly concerned about their financial situation, and the fact that because they had lost all of their money, he was no longer going to be able to provide them with the nice house and cars and the private schooling for his children. But what we haven't talked about yet is that in January of 2011, his dad dies. And Xavier is responsible for going to clear out his father's apartment.
He does it completely all by himself. That's something that Bruno made a big point of, is that he did it by himself.
And so, did they mention how his father died?
They said he just said he had an illness, that it was a totally natural death.
He had an illness, and he was lonely, and he was in poverty. They said that all of those things contributed to his death.
Which was something else that was kind of not well known, was that his father had also
lost all of his money.
But there was
apparently not known to Xavier either.
Yeah, because Xavier assumed that there was some kind of monetary inheritance that his father left him, and that was going to save him, right?
Yeah.
But there's nothing.
So this is what I'm asking. What are the possibilities it wasn't a natural death?
I mean, they didn't really explore that at all. It's something that crossed my mind, but we have to remember
financially. It already seems like there's a possibility I might be able to go insane and murder my entire family. I don't feel like knocking off your father would be too much harder.
Well, I think it might be worth mentioning another possible theory for why his father had no money left. So it's mentioned that Xavier has been having financial problems for years. What if the reason why his father had no money left is because he had been fronting Xavier's lifestyle?
Or at least paying his credit card bills. Or covering something
to help his son financially. But Xavier goes to his dad's apartment after his father passes away, whether it's because of natural causes. I mean, they really don't go into it too much.
You would think that before you knock your father off, that you would check and make sure he left you some money. That you wouldn't just make that mistake.
If he's nobility and he's given you no reason not to think he has money. I mean, it sounds like nobody knew either of these men were having problems financially. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible he didn't know his father was having problems financially, because his father sounds like he might have been a same type of guy as right. Xavier.
The one thing that they do mention that Xavier spends a lot of time looking for is the family ring. They say that he finds the long rifle. He finds a .22 long rifle, but he's searching for the family ring. Do we know what happened to that family ring?
It went with him, from what I... They don't really mention what happened to that ring.
The reason I'm asking is because if he was so interested in that ring and he already had this plan to off his family, is it possible he took that ring as collateral and then pawned it and was able to get money from it?
I mean, there's all kinds of possibilities, but the ring in particular that he was looking for is the signet ring that bears the family crest. So it would have been a family heirloom passed down through generations of, you know, counts.
Right.
Well,
the only reason I say that is because we know that they were found with religious icons. We know they were all found together, but...
Yeah, they never found the ring. They never
found the ring. It's not like he left it. Like, I would feel differently if maybe, like, you know, we know that Thomas is the oldest biological son of Xavier. So I would feel differently if maybe he had left the ring with Thomas, but he didn't do that.
Yeah.
So I assume that it wasn't something he actually gave a fuck about. He probably was looking for it to see if it had any monetary value.
So, yeah. So Xavier goes and searches his father's apartment. He finds the ring, and we learn all this through another neighbor of...
Yeah, this is a family friend. His name is Michael Calvey.
But while he's clearing out the apartment, he's states to Mr. Calvey that he is looking for money and that there's none there. But the only thing of importance that he inherited other than the ring is this .22 long rifle that belonged to his father. And that weapon becomes an important thing to look at the timeline of right from the beginning of when his father passes away too, because within 12 days of his father passing, Xavier files for and gets a firearm permit and spends a significant amount of time learning that weapon. And then within less than
a month before his family is found dead, he purchases a silencer. He purchases it on March 12th, and it says that he obtained the firearm license on February 2nd.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Because I don't really know a lot about gun licenses, all that kind of stuff. Not really a gun owner myself.
Well, I'm trying to figure out how he was allowed to keep it, because France has the same gun laws as England. And did he just get to keep it because he was nobility? Because they're not technically allowed to have them.
I mean, I'm sure there's some particular weapons or circumstances in which those weapons are grandfathered in that law. I mean, if it's a family heirloom, I mean, because we don't really know any history of the gun itself other than it was obtained when his father passed away, and then he spent, I mean, it even says at one point that he took two of his boys.
So, yeah. Wait, so you're saying that France is very similar to England's laws. What are the laws that you're talking
about? Civilians are not allowed to have guns. The cops don't even have guns in the UK. In the UK, if they need a gun, they have to wait for a specialized gun officer. The cops don't even have, like, our cops have readily available guns on their hips 24/7. They do not. If they're dealing with a situation where they need a firearm, they need to call a hotline. The hotline transfers them to the specific department that they need, and then a cop with a gun will be sent to them if they're not doing anything else.
Okay. So how is he able to get a gun license if that's the case in France?
Well, like I said, it might be because, I mean, I haven't researched it that deeply. I'm not that familiar with gun laws in France, but there's probably a clause that stipulates if it's a family heirloom type weapon.
I get that with the family heirloom, he could be able to have the gun because it's passed down. However, if they're that strict with gun laws,
I mean,
how did he get the gun license?
I don't know for sure if the place that he was at in France had the same laws. I just know that I've heard multiple news stories where France, like just the country of France, is not very open to guns. I mean, I believe that the United States at this point is the only country that allows the right to bear arms, if I'm not wrong.
No, I mean, there's countries all over the world that allow you to have firearms, but as far as having to have them licensed, I don't know. I'm not that familiar with gun laws around the world, so I don't know. I can't speak to that specifically, whether it is something that a civilian is allowed to own. I don't know. I know that, obviously,
well, we know based on that, he did get a gun law.
Got a gun license and was able to take it to a firing range and become familiar with it, yes, and was able to purchase a silencer for it.
Which, if my curious question,
in France, you can always tell us those gun laws on the Dragon Blazer Production fan page, because we clearly don't know what we're talking about. So if you're from France, please,
if there's
let us
any
know.
French listeners.
I know that a lot of, actually, the only reason I mention that is because a lot of our listeners are from outside of the United States, so they might have more knowledge than
only 52% of our listeners are from the United States, actually.
Yes. So, let's talk about the order of the deaths a little bit.
Yeah, so it was, like...
I had one other question.
Sure, go for it.
That didn't have to do with the gun. Why would you buy a gun license if he... Let's say he did it. And he killed it with this gun. Wouldn't you not want tied back with that, like, license? Doesn't that kind of flag you?
He probably needed the gun license to be able to continue to go to...
Why would you get a gun... This is why I'm asking this question.
He probably needed the gun license to continue to go to the gun range and get familiar with the gun. Or be able to have it in his home. He might have needed a gun license. Like, an official gun license.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure.
I mean, someone who murders his entire family might not be the best person that listens to laws.
Well, so that was one of the things that they did actually somewhat address, is that, you know, he has never
been interested
ever before been interested in weapons, but he's also never ever before had any legal trouble whatsoever.
Yeah, that's what's weird about this case, is because we are led to believe that this man killed his entire family and he was a criminal mastermind.
But then as they talk about it, so this was one of the things that really kind of irked me about this episode, was the very beginning of it. You are so immersed into this man is not just French royalty, but he's a super involved parent. He is uber loving to his family. He gives them the best of the best, but it's not just about the material things that he gives to the people that he loves. He's said to be an incredibly involved parent.
And not only that, but he's got an incredibly involved wife. In fact, his wife taught all of their children in Sunday school.
Yeah, I mean, he's portrayed as this incredibly loving friend and family man who...
Just, but the thing is he didn't snap.
Yeah, there was no, and that was one of the things that irked me, was it immediately went from this man who, you know, has had this incredible life and has all of these successful businesses and provides so much for his family, and then just formulated this plan and carried out this plan.
Elaborate plan that caused no evidence whatsoever, no blood spots, no blood traces, no
right. And anything. That's why we'll have to talk about theories here close to the end, because Dara's got a couple of good theories. I've got some ideas, and I'm sure you have some bad theories.
So, to kind of finish up how this case goes,
The kids are, the first murders take place on the evening of April 3rd or the morning of April 4th. They're not sure.
Yeah, it happened kind of in the middle of the night.
It had to have been at night. Yeah. I mean, let's be honest.
But they found sleeping pills in all four of the children's
systems,
but not in Agnes's. And authorities believe that Agnes was actually the first human victim. And they don't give any clues whatsoever as to when the dogs were killed in this timeline.
Well, I feel like
the dogs would have had to go first.
They had to have gone first. I feel like they had to have given the dogs some kind of drugs to be able to kill both of them without anyone noticing. And my assumption is that they gave the children the person gave the children the sleeping pills to knock them out before he killed his wife, or the accused killed the wife.
Well, so she might have been the first victim, but the reason that Agnes didn't have any sleeping pills in her system is because she didn't need them. She had a CPAP machine. She was already in bed. And they noticed that her CPAP machine stopped working at 3 a.m. the night of the murders.
Well, also, if she's the first one he killed, and he already gave sleeping pills to the kids,
yeah,
you know, it might be as simple as the person took them. And my thoughts is he had to have, like, put down some kind of tarp or something on the ground to get
some
no
way to prevent.
Literally. It had to be something crazy. Or my other thought is that what if the amount of sleeping pills in the system was a lethal amount? People bleed less if they're shot, if they're already dead.
Well, yeah, that's a theory, too. But there's a couple of other things that are kind of interesting. So we know that on the night of April 3rd, going into the morning of April 4th, that is when it is believed that Agnes,
Arthur
Anne, and Benoit
and the
are
two
killed.
Dogs.
And the two dogs. But Thomas actually...
What about the daughter?
That's Anne.
You said Anne. I'm sorry. Yeah.
But he actually allowed Thomas to go back to school. Thomas goes back to school
on Sunday the 3rd.
Yes. He goes back the night of the murders, actually.
And then, so the whole family had been together on Saturday the 2nd. On Sunday the 3rd, Thomas leaves and goes back to university. That's when they believe that all of the others were killed. And then on Tuesday, Xavier messages or calls Thomas and says, "Hey, you have to come back home. Your mom's been in a terrible bicycle accident. She's in a coma in the hospital. We don't know if she's going to make it." So Thomas books it back home from university. He messages a friend at midnight, and the friend replies a short time later.
And that message never gets answered.
Yeah, and Thomas never replies.
Police assume that that's when the sleeping pills would have been administered
to Thomas. And then, which we keep calling him Thomas, but his name is actually pronounced Tomas.
We're Americans. We're done.
That is when
they believe that Thomas is then killed and buried in a separate grave from everybody else. But it's interesting to note, so we were talking about how, earlier, about how Thomas would have been the first actual biological son.
Right. He would have been belonging to Xavier.
And, you know, if Xavier's plan was to kill the whole family, and there not be any, you know, extra circumstances or extra work, I'm sorry, but if I'm going to kill everybody, I'm going to do it all at once. I'm not sure why I have to stretch this out over 2 days.
Well, at least we know how why didn't he, kill everybody.
Why didn't he do that on Saturday night when the whole family was all together? And my theory is that it's because he was considering letting Thomas live and continuing the family lineage, carrying on the family name, and hopefully not bringing the same financial disgrace that, you know, Xavier and his father had brought to the family.
Now, we don't really know what made Xavier decide to kill his eldest son.
Or the rest of his family.
Right, yeah. But we do know that he...
Or the dogs.
Or the dogs.
Why kill the dogs?
Well, because you don't want the dogs to get away.
That's the obvious one, because the dogs are going to be giving you away as quickly as possible.
But I like dogs better than humans, so...
We all know that Dara's kids are her dogs, her real kids are...
Here at Unsolved Mysteries, we don't condone killing...
Small fluffy animals, and I don't care if it is the 160-pound Rottweiler.
We support not killing children as well.
Dog lives matter, though. So the police search takes place on the 21st, and that's when the bodies are found. At this point, Xavier has not been seen since the 4th, according to cops at this time. Yeah. We find out later that that's not exactly true, but...
That he'd been seen out in town. And then, so they're like, oh, shit, it's been like, you know, 3 weeks almost. Right. And we haven't even been searching for this guy. So
on the 4th, the murders take place. On the 5th, Thomas is killed. On the 6th, Xavier is seen outside. And he doesn't leave until the 10th. So he's out living his life, doing his own thing.
Living his best life.
Yeah, burying his family under the terrace. Which there's an interesting thing that we need to talk about there, too. Because it's actually stated by several people in the show that they don't believe that Xavier would be physically able to dig the graves that the family is buried in. He had very well documented back issues that would have prevented him.
Which, my curious question, and I don't know if you looked it up, is that medically a thing?
From what I could find,
that just based on hearsay?
From what I could find, it didn't look like it was a medical
Like, there wasn't a doctor who came out and was like, yeah, he had a bad back. But it was something that was well known by
his
friends and family and other, you know, people that he interacted with.
In fact, Bruno commented on his back pain and said that they had the same back pain. And it's the lawyer decides to say, hey, we don't think he could have done this. Let me also address the fact that I didn't say this at the beginning, but almost all of this information is coming from Anne Sophie Martin. She is a journalist that we assume covered the case at the time that it happened.
Yeah.
But almost all of this information comes from her.
Okay, so let's say that Xavier did this. And let's say he's been planning this for a long time. I mean, it could be a long con.
Well, I don't know that it was necessarily a long con as much as he knew that he was running out of time
before
he was discovered.
That's not what I meant.
At this point, they think he killed his kids is because at the point that he was at, they think that within a couple of months he would have lost the house, all of the cars, and his children would have been forced to go to private school.
I know. What I'm saying is, let's say he's been planning this for even longer than we thought. So, if it's just hearsay, and, oh, I have a bad back, and you have no medical records to prove it, I mean, it could be and you knew you were going to, if you had this planned out and you knew you were going to bury them in a place where it would be physically impossible for someone like that to do it. I'm just,
well, it's, so there's this idea that it's physically impossible. So I have a bad back. Like, but everybody's sitting at this table, like, bend over. We all know I have a bad back from a very bad car accident. But that doesn't mean that when the adrenaline is pumping and, I mean,
fair.
That you can't do incredible things. So but I'm not saying that it's not physically possible for him to have done it.
That is a long adrenaline to dig a hole for.
Especially hunched over. I mean, we're talking about a space that is only, like, at most.
With my health problems, I don't think I could do that.
Yeah, we're talking about a space. So
literally,
the terrace
they said
was,
it was probably about 6 inches tall, if that. Like, it wasn't very tall.
It was like, yeah, I think between
and
12
also,
and
that's a long time
be,
to doing that by yourself without anybody noticing.
Which is what brings me to my
wait,
personal conspiracy theory.
Wait for the theories. I'm just trying to.
We're almost there. So on the 22nd, Xavier's car is found. His car is found. And
so literally the day after they find the bodies, they find Xavier's car in this town way far away from where he lives. But
at a Formula One hotel.
France. Yes, at a Formula One hotel. I'm trying to see if I have
a Formula. I don't know.
How
it's pronounced.
It's the really long one that starts with an R.
That one.
The Rogue Brune sur Argence.
Yeah.
Which is in South France. And so they find his car one day after they discover the bodies, you know, after being like, oh, shit, we haven't looked for this guy for 3 weeks. And we probably want to do that. And
they checked
immediately
the hotel
find us.
And they didn't find him. So well, but then they discover that there's a really, really good trail.
Yeah,
really
like he left hotel receipts, credit cards, got caught on a speed camera.
ATM.
But every place that he was captured having been, every place that he traveled to on his way to this eventual hotel was some place that had significance in his life as far as, like, so his first stop was in
La Rochelle. And that's where he started. He married Agnes,
and then Toulouse, which is where a couple of his kids were born. And then he just traveled on to all of these places that
had
significance to his life.
But I will say this: at this point, police suspected he was going to kill himself. Which, spoiler alert, doesn't fucking happen. This guy,
well, it might.
Well,
have.
We don't know.
We don't know what happened.
I don't believe he killed himself.
So they find his car, and they're like, okay, now we know, you know, where his car was. Let's look at some CCTV, and they discover that there's this video of him walking across the hotel parking lot, carrying a bag of clothing, and then it becomes apparent that in one of the bags that he's carrying, he's actually got
the rifle,
or what they believe to be the rifle. And so he walks past this camera and
looks directly at
the camera, almost kind of like, hey, how you doing? And then disappears into the mountains, you know, of this area and is never seen or heard from again.
Right. Now, I will say that Bruno and this woman, her name is...
Before we get to what they think, we have to note that for 2 months after they found the car... They actually had
searched.
They
the
had
area around
firemen.
Area.
They had canine units. They had, you know,
cadaver
trained
dogs,
you
everything.
Know, everything. That all these people out there searching these mountains and cliffs, looking for, you know, either where he had traveled to or his body. Assuming that, you know, 98% of people who commit familicide end up committing suicide. And so the authorities assumed that he had taken this little pilgrimage, reminding him of all of the good times he had had with his family, and then, you know, finally walked into this mountain and hid in a cave or something and offed himself.
Now, here's the thing, though. They never find a body. They did a 2-month-long search with all of these trained animals and all this shit. All these people never found anything. But what we do find out from Anne Sophie Martin, is that there is a U.S. port on the other side of that mountain.
It's not like a U.S. owned port, but it's a port where
lots of U.S. ships come into.
Yeah, stock. So it's a trading port
about 30 kilometers away, which I don't really know how long that is because I'm America.
But if you like this, 30 kilometers per hour is about 10 miles per hour.
Yeah, but essentially 30 kilometers away. It is a seaport.
Right.
It leads you directly, you know, out into the sea. And one of the things that numerous people end up commenting on is how easy it is to
just buy a ticket on one of those
cargo ships. And essentially be gone. Whisked away.
Right.
And Anne Sophie Martin and Bruno, Xavier's best friend, both make mention of the fact that
they don't believe he killed himself.
They don't believe he killed himself and that he is fluent in
three separate languages.
French, obviously, but also in Spanish and in English. And both of them mention the likelihood of him catching a ride on a cargo ship and starting a new life in Central America or you know, South specifically America. Argentina. Because he has dark hair, dark eyes, a slightly darker skin complexion, and he already speaks the language. And then it is made mention by the chief of police.
Yeah.
How unremarkable
his features are. He looks like everybody.
Nobody and everybody at the same time. He's just somebody that could blend into a crowd and that you could look at his face.
Right.
And I could look at Steven right now and I see features that could be similar.
Right.
To his features.
In fact, Bruno even says it's more likely that he shaved his head or dyed his hair and went to Argentina than it is that he killed himself.
Yeah.
All right, so are we ready for the next segment?
Yes, that will bring us to the end of the case coverage, and now we'll get into the most interesting part, which is the theories.
Theories.
Alrighty, so now we are into my personal favorite part. I'm really excited to hear Dara's theories, but she wants to go last. So I'm going to let Steven go first, because I think that his theory is going to match up with Dara's, so I'll let him go first, I'll go in the middle, and then we'll do Dara's last, because hers is probably the best thought out.
Well, so obviously the most likely theory is that he did it himself. He killed his entire family. But for me, that seems a little too easy. Obviously, there's the whole back thing, which we don't know for sure whether that was real or not. There's also the fact that he made it so easy to track up until he disappears, which I find very weird. So the best theory I can come up with that isn't he just did it and disappeared, possibly committed suicide, is somebody had something over him, which I don't know what somebody could have over him that isn't simply, well, there's money, sure.
This guy could have been, like, weird. It's not like his kids are here to tell us anything bad that he might have done. I mean, he could have been awful.
I believe that there, even if he did it, there's at least a second party involved.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, yeah.
Definitely.
He had assistance in some way. Or
I think he hired Dexter and Dexter did the whole thing.
Dexter from the TV show, the Showtime TV show,
Jesus.
Dexter.
Yeah. Staunch Catholics.
Jesus did it. I just think it was his dark passenger just waking up. That's a Dexter reference for those who don't watch Dexter. but it almost seems like this seems almost too professional, almost like a French mafia or something was involved.
Or a very misunderstood U.S. government agency.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Who is very good at cleaning up crime scenes.
Yeah, the crime scene, like, to believe that Xavier did this honestly, on his own is, to my knowledge, he doesn't have any previous, like, education.
Forensic. I mean, he probably has, obviously, a college-level education, being French nobility. That's pretty commonplace. But as far as a forensics education or... I've never heard of another crime scene where there's literally
no
absolutely
blood.
No evidence at all. I mean, I've heard of cases where the evidence is very minuscule or has been degraded by cleaning agents or... But
unless
they literally found nothing.
Unless they weren't killed.
Yeah, but then, I mean, that's not even where...
I mean, because here's my thing. And this is just, we'll go into my theory a little bit.
So I don't get to finish my...
You're going
to
finish.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You're gonna
finish. No, continue, because...
Here's my thing. There was no gunshot holes in the beds. So they weren't killed in the beds.
It is a good point.
And they weren't killed in the floors.
But they found all of the bullets lodged in the bodies. So there wouldn't have been.
But how did he make that happen? Because if you shoot somebody point blank, gun to their head like this, that bullet's going through.
Not a 22. 22s are very small in the gun world.
Well, okay. I don't know a lot about guns, so I'll take your word. Go ahead, Steven. You can finish.
Okay, so... Yeah, we have to for him to have done it by himself, we have to believe he's a mastermind and knows to make sure, which, I mean, it's possible. I guess I would be able to think of, you know, I don't want blood splatter, so put something down, you know? Put down a towel.
But something that is a good, an interesting thing to bring up is, you know, the bullet holes, there not being any bullet holes in the mattresses is fairly easy to explain away with the fact that all of the bullets remain lodged
in the
skulls. What isn't explained by that is how do you keep blood from seeping into the mattresses? Unless you've already laid the bodies on a tarp.
That's what I'm saying is...
But how do you get your kids to go to sleep on a tarp? I mean, you're going to have to lift each individual body onto the tarp after they go to sleep.
If he didn't do it, who's to say that that didn't happen?
So my thought was that whoever did it, put a tarp down, put something down to clean it up, maybe put a pillow in there when he did the shot that might have made the blood
soak into the pillow.
Soak into the pillow, and he got rid of the pillows. But I believe he did each one individually because, like he said, now the dogs are a little more of a confusion factor for me. I feel like that they would be harder, and maybe he put them to sleep too.
I wonder if he laid the bodies on the garbage bags that they were then buried in.
I said tarp, but yeah, that's essentially what I'm saying is he did them.
But then you're still expecting one 50-year-old man with a supposedly bad back
to
be able to
people.
Lift these grown individuals. Because
Not
Arthur
to mention
is,
carry them downstairs to bury them.
But right. You're going to have to, they have to, how, okay, so.
Arthur's 20 years old. That's a full-grown adult.
That's a full-grown adult who's in very good physical condition. And you're lifting his full body weight. You're not going to do that one-handed. How did you lift the body and lay something underneath them with only having two hands?
Well, I would assume he laid the tarp down. He drugged them, then laid the tarp down while his wife was sleeping and did everything.
But the kids were...
Which I believe that somebody else did these things. But yes, I believe that the kids were not killed in their bed. I believe they were killed on a tarp or something to stop the blood. I believe that... I don't know if he did the shooting himself. And I do also believe that he knew this was coming.
I
believe he knew this was coming. And he was under some kind of coercion or something like that. And he thought he saved his oldest son. I believe that he sent his oldest son. He allowed him to go thinking, well, at least maybe I can save my oldest son and my lineage. So, and then whoever did this forced him.
The DEA.
The DEA.
The U.S. Drug Enforcement Agency.
forced him to get his son back.
Yeah.
So they could have him killed too.
I don't know. I have a couple of different theories, and mine also range from the more likely to the less likely, but I have a lot of questions on how physically one person could accomplish all of this. And I don't believe that they could. Right. I think that there has to be, at minimum, a second person involved.
Right.
Yeah, agreed. And
I, you know, Steven's finished his. I'm going to go into mine.
Ish, but we can
ish. I don't think...
Before you start, I have one question for Steven. Where do you think he went? What do you think happened to Xavier?
So I'm not sure on that, but I think that if we're to believe that the Mafia, or like you said, the DEA, which I'm not sure how the DEA gets involved with this cake.
So... Again, there's a large port right nearby where Xavier disappeared from. DEA works internationally. I mean, it's not an international agency, but it works with other agencies internationally to stop drug trade, which would very easily happen, or could very easily happen, through that port.
So are we thinking he was a drug dealer of some sort?
I think that there could potentially be a...
That might have been the last... There's a point in the episode where Anne Sophie says he was doing everything he could to make money.
That's true.
Maybe he was trying
to make
money.
And we know that he had at least some type of connection in some way to the U.S. We don't know exactly what that connection is. And it is a very elaborate lie to come up with the DEA being involved. And
now, do you think that letter might have been a cry for help?
I think
letters came after all of the victims were already dead and he was already on his merry way.
But I think that could have been... I think this is... Okay, so I'm just going to start with... I think that this is on the more unlikely end of the spectrum for things that could have happened. But I watch a lot of conspiracy videos.
She watches a lot of Shane Dawson, guys.
And I full-heartedly believe that our government agencies are involved in cover-ups. And especially with international...
Well, we know they are.
...instances.
Have you ever... We'll switch off just a little bit just to go into what Derek's saying about our government being involved in cover-ups. We know they're involved in cover-ups. You ever heard of the Franklin cover-ups?
Well, yeah. I'm just saying that I think that the letter could have been... I think it could have... And again, this is on the more unlikely end of my conspiracy theories. But I think that the letters could have been him essentially going outside of the cover-up and blowing the whistle.
Yeah.
And basically saying,
"That's what
hey, not necessarily a cry for help, because it's not, what help can there be?"
Right, but
I mean,
what I'm saying is like, what I'm saying is he somehow slipped this to, because that is an elaborate letter that was sent. So I'm saying, like...
But it could also be the cries of a desperate man, just like, hey, I don't want you to find out what I did yet, so I want you to think I was in the
US. I mean, that's what Bruno thinks. Bruno thinks that literally the letters were just something that he put out there because he wasn't ready yet. He needed more time.
Also, what I'm wondering is, it seems like based on his leaving and everything like that, he didn't leave at night. He left a paper trail, and I think whoever actually did the killing wanted them to see him go to these places. Now, it's possible the places they told him to go to places. It's possible they didn't tell him specifically places to go, but make sure that you leave a trail. Yeah. Make sure people know what direction you took. So he may have picked places that was dear to his heart.
So knowing he was going to leave his home country for the rest of his life.
But do you think he actually left? Do you think he was smuggled, air quotes, smuggled out of the country or somehow managed to get himself out of the country? Or do you think he
murdered
just
and
managed
in the ocean?
Either dropped in the ocean or managed to somehow get deep enough into a crevice in these mountains that when he killed himself, they just never found the body. I mean, it's not a perfect
science. The other thought is that maybe he's still somewhere in France.
True story.
I don't think he died in... If they killed him, or if he killed himself, I don't think he died in the mountains.
No.
But there has to be some kind of significance of why he or whoever wanted him to be seen going in those mountains.
Yeah.
I think he had something to do with it personally. I don't think... not for a fucking second do I think that this guy's innocent.
He had... There's no question he had something... Like, there's a part that he played. The question is whether... Did he play that willingly? Did he do that because he wanted to, or was he forced?
I mean, that's
a question. Was it forced?
Like I said, I don't think that the victims, I don't think they died in their bedrooms at the very least. Even if they died at the house, I don't think they died in their bedrooms. I think they all died in one room. I think maybe, you know, my dad, when I was little, like, you know, he had a 13-year-old and a 16-year-old. I remember when I was 16 and I stayed with my dad for a summer, he was like, let's make a blanket fort and just sleep on the floor in the living room.
Okay, but where do you think they were killed then? Because there was no evidence in any room. There's no evidence outside. Did he walk to the middle of the street and blow all their brains out?
What I'm thinking happened is I'm thinking that he probably... Okay. So there's a couple of ways that this could have been done. He could have had an umbrella that he put over the head of whoever he was killing, laid them down on the tarp, and then shot them. Any blood spatter would have gone onto the umbrella as opposed to...
But it's still going to drip.
I think it's more likely that he put him on a tarp and shot him through a pillow.
Yeah, but there would be blood splatter on the ceilings and walls.
Why? Not if you put a pillow in between the gun and the head.
That's fair. That's a good point.
How the hell... I mean, that has to be pretty big, especially if Dara's saying that .22 isn't that powerful of a rifle.
Yeah, I mean, a .22... I mean, it's going to depend on the specific gun, but most .22s are small enough that young children can fire them comfortably. So we're not talking about, you know, we're not talking like, you know, an AR-15 or AK-47 or even a 7mm, you know, sniper rifle type power shot. We're literally talking about...
Is this like a step up from a BB gun?
Yes, like barely.
Actually, that's exactly
so
what it
you
is.
Think that's why
hearing
you, had
you
to
say
shoot
it,
them all twice?
Hearing you talk about it, I kind of understand a little bit better because honestly, that's the gun that my mom wanted me to get
kind
for
of really
self
glad
protection.
Dara's on this episode because
yeah,
we have a little bit more gun knowledge here.
22s are very small, They're not high powered.
Which she also pointed out to me because I was complaining about the sound. And I mentioned that in real life, a silencer doesn't exactly completely muffle the sound of
right,
a gunshot.
Right, but 22s, according to Dara, are already pretty quiet.
Yeah, they're fairly quiet to begin with. And then you
add a silencer.
Add a silencer. And then especially, add a potential piece of you know, deafening fabric, sound deafening fabric in between, whether it's a pillow or a blanket or...
Well, the whole reason...
There's still going to be a sound, but it's going to be so minimal that it's not going to wake.
A neighbor's not going to...
Yeah.
Especially at 3 o'clock in the morning.
When everybody's dead asleep.
If everybody's already dead asleep, then it's very possible he could have shot
14 shots, essentially.
Well, it would have been 14. It wouldn't have been 14 shots. It would have been 12 on the first night and then 2 the night before.
Yeah.
Or the night after.
But I think that they're, again, it's more on the unlikely end, but I mean, we're also ignoring the fact that government agencies are, you know, conspiracy theory wise, pretty well known for covering up crimes and cleaning crime scenes.
I mean, to be completely fair, you're not wrong. When I mentioned earlier the Franklin cover-ups, they literally covered up an entire town.
Yeah.
Worth of molestation and child sex trafficking.
See, I honestly believe it had to have been someone else in that room with him. Like I said, whether he did the shooting or they did the shooting.
I think he did the shooting. I think the only thing he didn't do was dig the holes and move the bodies.
Well, what I'm saying is, if it was him and he's trying to get away, the woman said that the shutters are always open. He... would have known that.
So he closed the shutters.
I think he closed the shutters on purpose.
Or somebody else closed the shutters.
Right, that could have happened. I think that the shutters were closed and the note was placed up there to add to the theory. Because he knew that if he took everything and just made it look like they had all moved in a hurry... It wouldn't be weird for the shutters to be closed because if they had just moved in a hurry,
what I'm saying is
if
he just straight up killed his family by himself with no assistance, whatever, and he wanted to get away.
I think he did it on purpose. I think he purposely closed those shutters to make it look like the house was about to go up for sale or the house was about to go back up for rent.
What I'm saying is I think it's more likely that he either closed the shutters, or somebody else closed it, because I feel like if he did it, he would have left the shutters open. Because
it wouldn't have been
nearly as suspicious for his neighbors.
He clearly didn't leave the house the day up. They say that he stayed in the house until he left town.
But so, when he was gone, the shutters were closed.
Yeah.
And it would be way
but that's
more,
why I think
well, the shutters weren't closed until he
left town.
Right.
They were open the whole time that he stayed in the house and his family was buried under the
terrace. But the neighbors said that even when they went on vacation,
the shutters would stay open. He knew that he was going to write, whether we think the letter is real or not, if he knew he was going to write this letter, he wanted it to look like they had moved. He didn't want it to look like they were on vacation. He wanted it to look like that house was going back up on the market. So he closed the shutters on
purpose.
Y'all
are saying the same thing two different ways, essentially. So kind of gotten a lot of Steven's opinions, a lot of Kazea's opinions.
I want to hear your opinions.
Okay, so like I said, my crazy unlikely theory is that somehow this guy is actually connected to, you know, the DEA and Interpol, and they came in and wiped out his whole family and hid him away as some sort of agent someplace else. Crazy unlikely theory. Not what I really think happened. What I really think happened is that he has some sort of accomplice that he decided, you know, I'm tired of living this life where I have no money. I'm about to lose everything as it is. So forget this life. I want to go start something else. And him and his accomplice go through with the murders of his family. I think he was originally planning to leave his eldest son alive to continue on the family name after he is gone, and then decided, you know, that's a horrible idea, and went through with murdering him, and then took this pilgrimage to a place that he knew very well, and knew that he could get away. Honestly, I don't think that he committed suicide.
You mentioned earlier that you thought maybe he had another family somewhere.
Yeah, I think he might have had another. I think he had another life built and waiting for him to go to. This life had fallen apart, and he decided, I'm going to move on to something else.
Well, another family would also go into my theory of, like, mafia or the government, because they killed his family, so how much leverage would someone have over him if he had another life, another wife, another lover, another child?
Especially being in nobility, so that would be a big deal.
It could be as simple as, you know, we've already killed this family. If you want to keep that family, you need to go to these places. You need to leave yourself a trail.
Yeah. I'm not going quite that extreme. I think it's more likely that he just decided, just well, not even that he went crazy. I think he had just gotten to a place where he was in such desperate financial straits and there had no way of recovering it. And it's even said that he's an incredibly vain and proud man.
Yeah, that's why Bruno thinks he didn't kill himself.
He was like, you know, I can't make anything right in this life. I'm going to be a disgrace to my family and my lineage and my legacy anyhow. So let me just do away with it and let me go somewhere and start fresh. And I think he already probably had a place and a person in mind to help him with.
Actually, when you say it like that, it almost sounds like the Chris Watts case that took place in Colorado last year.
It's just, you just leave your family, damn it.
That's why I say it sounds a lot like the Chris Watts case, because Chris Watts killed his wife, his pregnant wife, and his two daughters, and his plan was to let them go missing and never be found, and then marry this Nicole Kissinger.
Yeah.
So it sounds a lot like that when she explains it that way.
Yeah, I think for me, that's the most likely thing to have happened, is that he had just decided, I can't make this life work anymore, and I've got something else, someplace else that's going to make me happier, and just decided to do away with it all. But the more fun theory is that he's somehow involved in a government agency, and they helped him come in and get rid of a mess and disappear.
I guess I just don't know crazy people, so I have a hard time to believe that someone just offed his entire family, didn't kill himself, and gleefully left.
Well, I mean, Chris Watts didn't kill himself either, and actually had no plans to. He hit it. I mean, because Kazea and I watch true crime videos a lot.
Yeah, we watch things constantly together.
I'm not saying he didn't.
It actually happens more often than you would think, that people would rather kill their family than leave it. It happens so often.
Chris Watts, literally the only reason that Chris Watts killed his family was because, and he said it, he said, I never wanted to have kids. I never wanted to marry Shanann. It was her that wanted to get married. It was her that wanted children. I wanted to live a bachelor's. They were together for, like, I think close to 10 years. They had two babies together. They had a third one on the way. Like, when he killed his family, everybody was shocked, and he made it seem like it was a missing persons case.
Was there any kind of, based on family, friends, blah, 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 did anybody have any, like, notion that he was capable of this?
Nobody had any notion
Chris Watts?
Because according to this, no one really thought that this man would be
nobody
capable.
Thought that Chris Watts,
nobody thought that this man was capable of doing it, but also nobody knew the real situation. Nobody knew.
True.
So, I mean, when you're talking about... they don't go into it, but super deep detail into who Xavier really and truly is, other than to say he was a great father, but he was also very vain and proud.
Well, he...
Which leads me to believe he's kind of a narcissist. So
that's exactly what everybody said about Chris Watts, too, was that he was very vain, yeah, and he was a narcissist, and that's why he killed his family, because he would rather kill his family than file divorce.
Yeah, be a failure.
I just, if he did it by himself willingly without being coerced, the only way that makes sense to me is whoever helped him had to have had some kind of training or knowledge on doing this kind of thing.
Yeah. Somehow they got incredibly, incredibly, incredibly beyond possibility lucky.
That's way too lucky. That is way too...
So like, where do you think he went, Miss Dara, since you don't think he killed himself?
I think he probably ended up... I think he ended up somewhere probably in Central America. I think his friend is right in that. With his language skills and his looks, being able to fit into a country where the majority of people around you are dark-haired, dark-eyed, darker-skinned, makes sense. It's easier to disappear when you look like everybody else.
Yeah, not only that, but he spoke fluent Spanish anyway. French is very similar to Spanish.
Yeah. I think he's probably chilling somewhere in Central America.
Do you think the person that helped him was anybody in that documentary? One of his friends? Neighbors?
There's nobody in the episode that really sticks out to me as would have been the accomplice. Bruno would have maybe been the only one.
Was that a...
That was the best friend.
That was a...
the one who looked like
ugly French Robert
Downey Jr. Robert,
yeah,
Downey
very Jr. ugly, fat French Robert Downey Jr.
As Kazea pointed at him out as.
But even he, when he's talking at the end, comes across as genuinely disgusted that believed
that the person that if someone helped him.
No, I think it was somebody that was completely unknown to everybody else. I honestly think that it was could have
been somebody from this new life that he had.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a theory, but yeah. I think it was somebody that was unknown to everybody else.
I feel like mafia or the government was more like... I'm sorry. I know it's outlandish, but the way this...
I think it's the more fun theory, and I think it would be the more fun theory to explore in depth, but we don't have any evidence to back it up.
That's my evidence. Yeah. It is such a clean murder, and I think the one thing these people allowed him to do is to put the religious figures, the crosses, like, yes, they killed him, but... You know, we buried him. Sure, whatever. You want to put that there? Because I do believe he cared about his family to an extent.
I think he cared more about himself. And that's the thing. I won't take away from him that he was an incredibly involved father and that he did, until he absolutely couldn't anymore, provide very well for his family. But it was found out that he had lied about his business success, that he had lied about his financial situation, and he had not just lied to the public, he had lied to literally every member of his family as well.
It also goes to suggest that his failed businesses, is it possible that somebody gave him some kind of loan or something that caused this to...
There's so many different possibilities, and that was one of the things...
Like the mafia.
I mean, that was one of the things that bothered me with this particular portrayal in this episode, is that they don't give us a whole lot of background information about what was his business? What was it that he supposedly did? How did he support his family for so long? You know, what was it? They just don't go into it. And it bothers me that he is portrayed as this incredibly loving person, and then literally the next breath, it's...
He killed his family.
He's the only suspect in the murder. And the thing is I don't think there's any way possible for him to be the only suspect. I think he is definitely the number one person they need to talk to.
Well, they just didn't find anyone else that would fit.
But they didn't look that hard. They literally didn't look at any other possibility other than this man carried this out by himself.
I don't believe that at all. No matter how this ended, whether it was him, whether he was forced, whatever, somebody else was involved.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed, absolutely.
All right, so,
is that anything else
to add?
Don't trust the DEA. And don't kill dogs.
Please don't kill dogs. She doesn't give children. A fuck about the kids, man.
Don't children. Kill dogs. Don't kill children. Jeez.
I mean, I feel like killing children goes without... Don't kill children goes without question. But don't kill dogs. Like, why? I like dogs.
She likes the dogs. She likes the dogs.
She watched Pet Sematary and the child dying means nothing to her.
I mean, she named her child after a bunch of fucking characters in horror films. Her kid's name is Aiden.
Yeah, so if you've ever watched The Omen or The Ring.
This is just her everyday life.
I mean, I named my son after an X-Men
character. I mean, your son shares the name of the evil guy.
Yeah, literally.
Alleged evil guy.
Listen here. If you're going to keep using that alleged shit, I'm going to keep calling you a bitch because he did it. I don't even give a fuck. He did it.
Well, since Kazea knows he did it, she can go in there. She can prove it. It's fine.
I mean, everybody knows he did it. They don't know where he is, so they can't charge him with anything. It's not that they're trying to figure out who did it in this case. They're trying to figure out where the fuck this guy is.
We've
already had an issue with you assuming that you're right.
Listen, buddy, I need you to shut up.
Nah, I mean, he definitely played a part, there's no way that he did this by himself. There's just no way. And anybody who thinks that he did
is out of their
mind. Is a dog killer. And I don't condone that.
We just need John Wick to come in and save everyone.
I need Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock on this case, please.
What?
I said I need Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock on this case.
Benedict Cumberbatch!
Do you know he can't say penguin right?
Yeah.
Okay. We're getting a little.
I mean, did you also know that he was in a Shakespeare show and he like yelled at some guy in the audience because they were videotaping him? He was like, "Put your fucking phone away!"
But he says penguin 12 different times.
Oh my god,
12 different ways, right. And his name is Benedict Cumber. What the fuck ever?
Cumberbatch. Anyways, all right. So, Dara, do you have anything you want to plug?
No.
No. Okay.
Kazea? If you want to contact us, you can contact us on the Dragon Blazer production fan page or on the brand new Unsolved Comedies Instagram page that I just created a minute ago.
The only thing I will say, though, is if you buy... some weird fucking chance have any idea where this guy is, please go tie him up and put him in a trash bag and deliver him to the French authorities.
And make sure you duct tape the bag shut.
Or call our contact unsolved.com as the show that we just watched and we are talking about suggests to catch him.
Yes, but if you guys do have anything you want to tell us or if you guys would like to follow the show from now on, There is a brand new Unsolved Comedy Instagram page under the name Unsolved Comedies. So,
and then there's that. I also have Dragon Blazer Pro and on Twitter, and Dragon Blazer Productions also on Instagram that I'm still trying to figure out Instagram. So, Dragon Blazer Productions, a Facebook fan page, and a Dragon Blazer Pro Twitter. You can contact us and come up with your own theories. We'll talk about it on the show.
Yeah, if you would like to go to the Unsolved Comedies Instagram page, Unsolved_comedies, and tell us your theories in the comments. We'd love to actually see what you guys think.
We also have, let me get it real quick. We also have an email.
It's unsolvedcomedy@gmail.com.
I thought it was Unsolved Comedies.
No, it's not. It's not. I just used it to create an Instagram page. I know what it is.
They don't know what the hell they're doing.
Shut up! Listen!
Where's my accounts?
I don't know. You're an idiot.
We literally have the blind leading the dumb here.
I mean, to be fair, I hope I'm at least the blind, because I'm not as dumb as that fucker over there.
No, you're totally wrong. He's definitely the blind.
I mean, he does wear glasses. That's fair.
I mean, that's true.
And you should be a blonde.
Oh. Alrighty, guys. Well, I guess we should probably call it a night. It is 12:50 in the morning where we are.
And I've been on the road for 2 days.
She slept in a hotel bed last night. Let me tell you, Dara is not nice when she's been sleeping on hotel beds.
I've been very nice this podcast,
believe it or not. Outside of the podcast, you're not very nice.
Ever. That's really...
Yeah, there was a lot less anger and yelling that I was expecting.
I was honestly assuming to get called like a bitch a fuck ton more throughout this podcast.
Well, I think it's interesting that on this one topic, we seem to pretty much agree that this guy did some really screwed up stuff, and, you know, so did potentially a government agency or the mafia or somebody. So, yeah, it's just, I think that this particular case is not particularly polarizing, at least based on the information that we have. But it is a very interesting case, and unsolved in that they have never found him to conclude
right. Yes. But, you know, Steven and his bitch ass has to go to bed.
I don't have to go to bed.
You're gonna have to go pick up your son tomorrow morning.
Look, my bitch ass has to go to fucking bed. Good to go? I've got a whole last day.
All right.
So long and good night, everybody.
And don't be on our next episode of Unsolved Mystery.